Imagine you're 3 hours into a 4-hour cross country. Beautiful day. You're on course, fuel is fine, everything looks dialed, then the engine gets quiet. Not dead quiet, just different. You run through your checklist, you're over terrain that doesn't have a lot of options beneath you, and somewhere in the back of your mind a thought surfaces. Nobody knows exactly where I am right now. That scenario is what I want to work through today. Because what changes in that moment, what changes everything, is whether or not you filed a VFR flight plan before you left. I'm Pattern. This is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar, and today we're digging into one of the most underused tools in cross-country flying, the VFR flight plan free to file. Takes about 5 minutes. And if things go sideways out there, it's what gets search and rescue pointed in your direction instead of guessing. Before we get into it, a quick word from AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. First, solo. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, real milestones. Mark the right way, AviationSoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. Here's something I've noticed after years of instructing. Students file flight plans during training because I make them. Then, the moment they earn their private certificate, they stop. Almost universally. I'll ask about it at the first post-checkride flight and get a shrug. I figured I didn't really need to anymore, and I understand the impulse. When everything is going well, the flight plan feels like bureaucracy, extra paperwork. A box you check because your instructor is watching. It's only when something goes wrong that you understand what it was quietly doing for you. So let's start at the foundation. What is a VFR flight plan and what does it actually do? A VFR flight plan is a record you file with flight service before you depart. The FAA flight service program today is operated by Leidos, and they are the ones holding your information. You give them your aircraft identification, your aircraft type, your true airspeed, your departure airport, your proposed departure time, your cruise altitude, your route, your destination, your estimated time on route, and your fuel on board. You also provide a description of your aircraft and contact information for someone to reach if you don't show up. That last part is the mechanism, because what the flight plan does is set a timer. When your estimated time of arrival passes and you haven't closed your flight plan, flight service initiates a process. They try to reach you by radio on known frequencies. They contact destination airports. They check along your filed route. And if a certain amount of time goes by without locating you, they notify the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center. Search and rescue gets activated. That's the insurance policy. Someone starts looking for you within a known window, along a known route, in a known aircraft, with a known paint scheme. Without a flight plan, nobody starts looking until someone figures out you're missing. And that might be 6 hours after you were supposed to land. Now, how do you file one? The most common method today is through 1800wxbrief.com. That's the Leidos Flight Service portal. Free account, and you can file flight plans, pull a standard weather briefing, check NOTAMs, all in one place. If you're using 4Flight or Garmin Pilot, you can file directly from within those apps. If you prefer voice, call 1-800-WX-BRIEF, 1-800-992-7433, and a specialist walks through the form with you. Let me go field by field, because a few of these trip people up aircraft. Identification is your N number. If you're renting from a club, use the club's tail number, not your certificate number, not your name. The tail number, aircraft type, and special equipment. The make and model of the aircraft, Cessna 172, Piper Cherokee, Beechcraft Bonanza, followed by an equipment suffix code. Your EFB app will usually guide you through this based on your avionics. If you're unsure, the Aeronautical Information Manual has the full list. Don't guess on this one. Your instructor or the app can confirm what suffix applies to your aircraft. True airspeed, not indicated airspeed. True, at 3,000 feet on a standard day in a Cessna 172, you're looking at around 110, maybe 112 knots true. Your E6B or your flight planning app will give you that conversion based on your planned altitude and the forecast temperature aloft. Departure point, your airport identifier. Proposed departure time. File this in Zulu, Universal Coordinated Time, not local. This is a common mistake. If you're departing at 10 in the morning Pacific time during summer, that's 1700 Zulu. When in doubt, your weather briefing app shows the current Zulu time right on the screen. Cruising altitude, your planned VFR altitude, and here's a good reminder for checkride prep. VFR cruising altitudes above 3,000 feet above ground level follow a specific rule under FAR 91.159 eastbound. Magnetic course 0 to 179 degrees, you fly odd thousands plus 500, 3,500. 5,500, westbound 180 to 359 degrees, you fly even thousands plus 500, 4,500, 6,500, the examiner will absolutely ask about this. Route a flight. Keep it simple if you're going direct, write direct. If you're using navigation waypoints or VORs, list them in order. The goal here is to give a search corridor. If you go missing, rescuers need to know where to look. Destination, airport identifier, estimated time, en route. Hours and minutes from brake release to touchdown. This is where your flight log math pays off. Fuel on board, convert your usable fuel to endurance in hours and minutes. A Cessna 172 with full tanks, about 53 gallons usable at roughly 10 gallons per hour, gives you about 5 hours and 15 minutes, be honest. Don't pad it. If search and rescue thinks you have 6 hours of fuel and you're actually at 3 hours, that's a problem. Alternate airport, optional for VFR, but worth filling in. If your destination goes below flyable conditions, where would you go? You've already thought about it in your planning. Write it in. And then your name, address, phone number, and a color description of the aircraft. That last piece matters more than you might think. If you're down somewhere remote, the search aircraft are looking for a white and blue Cessna 172, not just any white airplane. The whole form takes about 5 minutes the first time, 3 minutes once you've done it a few times. Now the part that gets people in trouble, you have to close your flight plan when you land. This is not a courtesy. It is non-negotiable. If you land and forget to close, the timer keeps running. Eventually, flight service can't reach you, and they start making calls. Your family gets contacted. Search and rescue resources get pointed at your route. This has happened. Pilots land at their destination, get distracted by a fuel stop or a weather check or just the business of being somewhere new, and they forget. An hour and a half later, things are happening at your destination. Close on the radio with a flight service facility. If one is available, call the 1800 WX brief number by phone or use the one-tap close function in your EFB app. 4Flight has it. Garmin Pilot has it. Use it. Make it a habit. I want to address something I hear fairly often. Pilots who skip the VFR flight plan because they figure ATC can always find them on radar. And that's partially true. In radar coverage, ATC can see your target. But radar coverage has gaps. A lot of low-altitude VFR flying happens beneath radar, especially in mountainous terrain, in valleys, and in parts of the country that simply aren't covered at 2,000 feet above ground level. And even where radar exists, controllers aren't tracking every VFR target with the same attention they give IFR traffic. A VFR radar return with no associated flight plan just isn't getting the same watch. There's also the ADS-B argument. I've got ADS-B out, people can see where I am. True. But the ADS-B network is not tied to a search and rescue activation system. ADS-B shows position data. A filed flight plan creates an official notification in the system that puts trained people on the phone looking for you. Those are different things. Let's talk about how the flight plan fits into the full cross-country planning sequence. Because this is really how I teach it, not as a separate task, but as the capstone to everything else you've already done. Step 1 is your weather briefing. A full standard briefing through 1800 WX brief, not a quick glance at a phone app. You're looking at the surface analysis, the winds aloft forecast at your planned altitude, the prog charts to see how the weather is moving, the airmets, the sigmets if there are any, and the TAEFs for both your departure and your destination. You're building a mental model of what the atmosphere is going to do along your route for the window you're flying. Step 2 is your flight log. A real one. Either on paper or in your EFB. You're plotting your checkpoints, computing your true course, applying your wind correction angle from the winds aloft forecast, getting your magnetic heading, computing your ground speed, adding up your leg times. And yes, even if GPS is going to navigate the whole flight, you do this work. Because the airman certification standards require it, because the examiner is going to ask about it, and because the GPS has no idea what to do if it fails over empty terrain halfway through. Step 3 is your performance calculations. Actual weight and balance for the day. Actual takeoff and landing distances using the current elevation, the current temperature, the density altitude, not sea level standard day numbers from memory. Step 4 is your NOTAMs check. Temporary flight restrictions especially. A TFR you don't know about is a phone call from the FAA you really don't want. Presidential TFRs pop up with short notice. Stadium TFRs go active a little before game time and shut off a little after. Wildfire TFRs appear and move. Check every time. Step 5 is the flight plan. You've already done the work. The route came from your flight log. The airspeed came from your performance planning. The fuel came from your weight and balance. The form is just pulling those numbers together. 3 minutes. The airman certification standards for the private pilot certificate are very specific about what cross-country planning looks like. The examiner is going to give you a destination at the oral and ask you to plan the trip. You need to show you can select a route, pull a weather briefing, compute the headings and times, check the performance, verify the fuel, identify the airspace, and file a flight plan. That's all in the ACS, Task B1, and Task C1. What I see students miss most consistently is the airspace along the route. Not the destination, most students have that covered, but what they fly through to get there. Is there Class B airspace you need to stay clear of? A Class C where you need two-way communication established before entering. A Mode C veil that requires an altitude encoding transponder? These aren't optional considerations. They're go or no-go items. You work them into the planning, not discover them in the air. Here's a real scenario. You're planning a 250-mile cross-country, roughly 2 hours and 15 minutes in a Cessna 172. The weather at departure is clear and a million. The weather at your destination is forecast to be 4,000 scattered with good visibility all day. But the afternoon winds at your destination are forecast at 20 knots, gusting to 32. The weather is legal. Is the flight appropriate? You're a newly certificated private pilot with 60 hours total time. You're going to arrive in the afternoon after a 2-hour-plus flight. The winds at your destination, while legal, are going to be at the limits of what you're comfortable handling. This is where the decision isn't about legality. It's about risk management. Can you depart earlier in the day to beat the winds? Can you plan a fuel stop before the destination and check the weather one more time before committing to the final leg? Is there an alternate airport nearby with a runway better aligned to the forecast wind? The flight plan doesn't make that call for you, but here's what it does. If you're in the air and conditions are changing and you decide to divert, you can reach flight service on 122.2, update your destination, and your search and rescue window adjusts. You're not flying into a different situation from what's on file. The system knows where you're going. That's the piece about the VFR flight plan that doesn't get enough credit. It's not just an emergency tool, it's a live communication link with the flight service system that lets your intentions stay current as the flight evolves. One more thing before I let you go. VFR flight plans are entirely voluntary. The FAA doesn't require them, which means the only reason most pilots don't file is habit. The habit they had in training faded once the certificate was in hand, and they never got it back. Build it into your pre-departure checklist. Right after you finish your weather briefing, right before you grab your bag and head to the airplane. Not a production, not an ordeal. 5 minutes and a few keystrokes. And if the engine ever gets quiet over terrain that doesn't have a lot of options, someone is already looking at a map with your route on it. The Aeronautical Information Manual, Chapter 5, Section 1, has the procedural details on flight plans. Find us at radiohangar.com. Stay safe out there. I'll see you next time.